Welcome back to the Torah. Today we begin a new parasha called Mishpatim, which means rulings or ordinances. It's found in the first verse of chapter 21, Exodus or Shemot, reading from the CJB, the Complete Jewish Bible. These are the rulings, Mishpatim, that you are to present to them. Now remember, yesterday we left off with the verse about not building steps on his altar, that the priest would walk up steps to engage in the public worship of God, as they did in Egypt with much fanfare and drawing attention to their splendor. God says, you don't need to do that with me. The Midrash explained this, how the mention that there's no need for steps to be built, and then verse 1, these are the rulings. They believed that those two verses were connected. It said, according to Rabbi Abina, that just as God warned the priests not to take big strides on the altar, but to walk with the heel touching the toe, so God warns all subsequent judges not to take big strides, as it were, in passing judgment. Humility. That God is the judge, and he is the one saying, these are the rulings. It's not about man being the focus, as they were in Egypt, but God himself, in a personal way, has come to the earth and is presenting his rulings, his ordinances. Now, what are to follow are some difficult passages for many to get past, to get through, because they involve the idea of slavery. So let's move through them, and I'll do my best to explain. Verse 2, if you purchase a Hebrew slave, he is to work 6 years, but in the seventh, he is to be given his freedom without having to pay anything. I will preface all these passages by saying that God has come now into that particular time and that particular culture, that particular society, where slavery, cruel slavery, remember the children of Israel had just been redeemed from cruel slavery where they were held against their will. Now God comes and begins to bring ethics into the Hebrew culture. Ethics, the ethical treatment of one another. He doesn't come and just abolish everything. He comes within the culture and begins to slowly reform the culture. This was revolutionary because life in the days that we're reading about was brutal. And the children of Israel themselves had experienced brutal treatment. Now he's coming and saying, now I don't want you to do that. He doesn't say we're going to just wipe out slavery. Slowly he did that within society over time. But he's teaching them, he's teaching us, he's laying the groundwork for the future, that we are to treat each other with humanity, we are to treat each other ethically and honestly. So slavery in those days, within the framework of Israel, was limited to indentured servitude. It was not forced. It was not kidnapping someone against their will and holding them as slaves. People would give themselves to servitude for numbers of reasons, but it was a willing participation. They would enter into a period of time where they worked for someone else. They gave themselves over to it. It's quite different than what we think of as slavery today. So there was a limit now, God bringing about an ethical treatment of an indentured servant, only 6 years. Only six. The Midrash explained that they were commanded not to enslave their brother longer than 6 years, for God said, I have created the world in 6 days, and for this reason have I allowed you 6 years in which you are permitted to enslave a Hebrew servant. So time limits are placed upon the culture. If he came single, verse 3, he is to leave single. If he was married when he came, his wife is to go with him when he leaves. But if his master gave him a wife and she bore him sons or daughters, then the wife and her children will belong to her master, and he will leave by himself. Nevertheless, if the slave declares, I love my master, my wife, and my children, so I don't want to go free, then his master is to bring him before God, and there at the door or doorpost, his master is to pierce his ear with an awl, and the man will be his slave for life. Again, choice was involved. A decision based on the servant was allowed. So he's setting down the laws of the land for their society, and it is going to be quite a bit different and much more humane, much more ethical than the other societies that existed in that day. He's elevating, you see, his people and their culture to a higher plane. I know it seems rough to us to read these things, but in that day, it represented tremendous compassion and tremendous grace from their God. Verse 7, if a man sells his daughter as a slave, she is not to go free like the men slaves. Now here once again was a willing decision that was made by the family with the daughter's approval to go to work for someone else for a period of time. Remember, people in these days, if you were poor and you didn't have anything, there were no social service benefits available to you at this point. So if you were in great debt to someone, you owed somebody work that needed to be done, you could give yourself over to work for them for a period of time that included family members. But here we're going to see that the laws for the daughters or the women were better than even what God was permitting for the men. You weren't just to cut her loose after 6 years, but the young woman was to be treated fairly and treated with dignity, not just cut loose to be on her own in that wild world, but she was to be protected. It says in verse 8, if her master married her, but decides she no longer pleases him, then he is to allow her to be redeemed. He is not allowed to sell her to a foreign people because he has treated her unfairly. Again, ethical treatment is being introduced. If he has her marry his son, then he is to treat her like a daughter. If he marries another wife, he is not to reduce her food, clothing, or marital rights. If he fails to provide her with these three things, that is, food, clothing, and marital rights, then she is to be given her freedom without having to pay anything. Verse 12. Whoever attacks a person and causes his death must be put to death. So capital punishment being instituted here for the children of Israel to deter. Remember, God just finished giving the Ten Commandments, do not murder. So he says now to deter people from breaking that commandment, your life will be required of you if you intentionally murder someone else. The idea behind this was to keep people from murdering one another. It is definitely a deterrent to murderers, the idea of capital punishment. Verse 13, if it was not premeditated, but an act of God, then I will designate for you a place to which he can flee, cities of refuge, which we will get to later. In other words, if the killing was unintentional, today we would call it manslaughter. There's a difference between murder and manslaughter. And then there's accidental death. Then there's differences between these things and murder. So God, again, instilling ethical treatment and justice. These are new concepts to these former slaves who were treated so brutally. See how he is elevating their standard of life. But if someone willfully, verse 14, kills another after deliberate planning, you are to take him even from my altar and put him to death. Capital punishment for intentional murder. Verse 15, whoever attacks his father or mother must be put to death. We're going to see a lot of this idea of being put to death for certain sins, certain crimes. Again, God laying the groundwork so that his people will understand how important it is to not sin against God. It's almost like teaching a toddler. You have to make it very clear what is acceptable and unacceptable in those early years of childhood so that they understand consequences and they begin to follow the right way. So God making it very clear what he requires. Verse 16, whoever kidnaps someone must be put to death, regardless of whether he has already sold him or the person is found still in his possession. Now this makes it very clear that the slavery that we have seen within our own history in the United States and elsewhere, the African slave trade, for example, where men and women were kidnapped against their will, never was something God approved of. It's clearly spoken of here. The idea of taking someone against their will was always against God's principles. So those slave owners in our own country that kept people against their will, who took people that were kidnapped from their lands, were in a constant state of sin before God. Verse 17, whoever curses his father or mother must be put to death. Notice how the treatment of your parents is up near the same level as murdering and kidnapping. How important it is to God, that children treat their parents with dignity and respect. Verse 18, if two people fight and one hits the other with a stone or with his fist, and the injured party doesn't die but is confined to his bed, then if he recovers enough to be able to walk around outside, even with a cane, the attacker will be free of liability except to compensate him for his loss of time and take responsibility for his care until his recovery is complete. So we see the instituting of taking responsibility for your mistakes. Taking responsibility. Today we have the legal system and lawsuits, suing people, providing compensation for things that you did, that you caused harm or caused some sort of financial loss, that the person couldn't work. You have to take responsibility for those things. Again, this is all new in that culture at that time. God's standards are being instituted, and he's beginning a culture that will better reflect who he is, his justice, on this planet. Torah 101.